Do It Yourself by David Halliwell, with Terry Malloy as Marcus and Lois Dane as Jasmine. Do It Yourself.
The wee man's here from Racing Bike magazine.
Ah, yes. Show him in, Kelda.
Will you be having an interview in the lounge or in the study?
Oh, in the lounge, I think. Don't want to be too formal.
You see.
Yes, thanks, Kelda. And will you please ask Jasmine to join us there?
I will.
Good morning, Mr. Lithgow.
Ah, good morning.
My name's Walker from Racing Bike magazine.
Ah, here comes Jasmine. Mr. Walker, let me introduce my wife.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Walker.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Lithgow.
Would you like to sit down?
Oh, thank you.
Oh, would you care for anything? Tea?
Oh, no, thanks. It's very kind of you. Do you mind if I use this tape recorder?
Not at all.
It's more accurate than shorthand.
Yes.
Well, my shorthand, anyway.
Your shorthand will be better than mine.
Yes?
I can't do it at all.
Well, you're so good at so many other things.
Oh, it's very nice of you.
It's true, my dear.
Well, thank you, my love.
Shall we begin?
Yes, fire away.
Well, as you know, I'm here because you won the 500cc championship race at Mallory Park last Saturday.
Yes.
Only the latest in our long line of successes.
Thank you.
But before I ask you about motorcycle racing, I'd like a few details about your personal life.
All right.
And I'd like to ask you a few questions too, if I may.
Certainly.
Right, thanks. And how old are you, Mr. Lithgow?
44.
And I'm 37.
Oh, I wasn't...
But I thought you'd like to know.
Yes, well, thanks. Yes, I would. How long have you been married?
10 years.
And very happy years they've been.
Very happy.
Good. Now, you're a geologist by profession.
Yes, I'm senior lecturer in geology at Watford University.
But you live here in Hampstead?
Yes, I commute to the university.
This is a large house in a very fashionable part of Hampstead. I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you must be quite well off.
Yes, I've been lucky. I inherited a lot of money from my parents.
So, you don't need to work?
Financially speaking, no. But I've always been interested in geology. It's a kind of vocation.
He's a very highly respected and able man.
Do you have any children?
No.
No.
You live here alone?
No, we have a housekeeper.
The lady who showed you in.
Oh, yes.
She's almost one of the family.
Yes, we're on very friendly terms with her.
Good.
She's a Scot, and my ancestors were Scots.
Fine. Now, in addition to motorcycle racing, have you any other hobbies?
Yes, I'm very interested in do-it-yourself.
Are you?
Yes, I'm as keen on that as I am on motorcycle racing.
Really?
Oh, yes.
He's converted a room in the house into a workshop.
Yeah. What sort of things do you do?
Oh, all sorts of things.
He did all the shelving and wooden panelling throughout the house. He installed the central heating and the double glazing. He tiled the floors. He upholstered the chair you're sitting on.
Darling, he doesn't want to hear all this.
Yes, I do.
Yes, he does. He built a small electric generator in the cellar for use when the public power supply breaks down.
Very impressive.
Yes.
Oh.
So, you do some engineering amongst other things?
Yes.
Which brings us to bikes.
Yes.
Do you do a lot of work on your bikes?
Yes, I make a lot of modifications.
Ah, how many bikes do you have?
3.
What are they?
The oldest is a 1967 short-stroke air Machi Matisse, which I use for the CRMC events.
Ah, yes.
And then I have a Honda GL1000 Goldwing made in 1974.
Marvellous.
And thirdly, I have a 1978-79 Zundapp K5175.
3 very different bikes.
Yes, I like a little variety.
And when did you start motorcycle racing?
My first race was in 1959 when I was 17, on a 125cc Blandford, where I finished 9th. Then a few weeks later, on the 125MV, I had my first win at Alton Park.
What a beautiful summer's day.
Aye. A lovely start to your long vacation.
Hmm. Has Jasmine gone out yet?
Aye. She left about 10 minutes ago.
Well, I'm going into my workshop.
Hi.
I'll see you later.
What did I do with that cheese grater? Somebody at the door.
Yes?
It's Kelda. There's a parcel for you.
All right. Please bring it in.
Here you are.
Oh, thanks. Oh, Wonder what it can be.
Well, you're not expecting a parcel?
No.
Well, doesn't it say anything on it?
No, I don't think so. Simply addressed to me.
Well, where did it come from?
Let's look at the postmark. Luton. Posted yesterday.
Do you know anybody in Luton?
No, not at all. Well, who on earth can have sent it? I mean, what on earth can be inside it?
There's only one way to find out.
Yes. I'll open it carefully. This really is quite intriguing. One layer of paper. Oh, there's another layer of paper. Well, what is it?
I don't know.
Appears to be some sort of kit.
It could be.
But a kit for what?
Well, I can't tell you.
I mean, if it were assembled, what would it make?
Well, aren't there any instructions with it?
No. As far as I can see, no note, no instructions, no diagram. What on earth is it? Why should anyone send it to me?
You've no idea.
Not the slightest. As a matter of fact, it makes me feel rather wary.
Why?
Might be dangerous in some way.
Why do you say that?
Well, you know, these days.
Oh, no.
You don't think so?
Oh, no. It just looks like some kind of toy.
Yes. Yes, I suppose it does.
It must be a leg pull from one of your pals.
Well, I suppose that's possible. I can't think of anybody who'd do anything like this.
Well, if you put the pieces together, maybe you'll get the joke and you'll know who sent it to you.
When it's assembled, it'll reveal the identity of the sender.
Aye.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right.
Aye.
Actually, I find the mystery of what it's going to turn out to be and who sent it rather exciting. Stimulating the old do-it-yourself juices. Yes. I think I'll start trying to fit the parts together.
Aye, well, I'll leave you to it. Have a look.
Yes, I've laid out all the parts on the bench.
Yes.
Haven't managed to fit any of them together yet.
You've really no idea at all who sent it?
No. Crack my brain. Can't think of anybody, can you?
No. It doesn't fit any of your friends that I've met. I'm absolutely baffled.
Come on, let's... No. Let's see. Oh.
It's 7 o'clock. Oh, no. Dinner's ready. Dinner's ready. It's 7 o'clock.
Oh, thank you, Kelda.
How are you getting on with that thing?
Well, I've only succeeded in getting about half the pieces together. Still no idea what it can be.
Oh, well, you'll just have to persevere.
Yes. You're going out this evening, darling?
Yes. A meeting.
What is it this time?
Local committee of the National Association for the Disabled.
Oh, yes.
You'll be all right?
Oh, of course, darling. I'll be quite happy to assemble a strange contraption in my workroom.
Well, if you want anything, Keldra will get it for you, my love.
Oh, don't worry about me. I'll be having fun.
I think we should rent a stall at Camden Lock Market, where we could distribute leaflets and sell badges and T-shirts and that sort of thing. That seems to be an excellent idea.
No, I don't know, Madam Chair. I can think of several objections.
Can you?
Yes.
What are they?
Well, to begin with...
Oh, excuse me. Hello?
Could I speak to Mrs. Jasmine Lithgow, please?
Oh, yes, of course. It's for you, Jasmine.
Oh, thank you. Hello?
Mrs. Lithgow?
Yes?
This is the police. I'm afraid your husband's had an accident.
An accident?
Yes. Could you please come to the Royal Free Hospital at once?
Mrs. Lithgow?
Yes.
I'm Inspector Bright. I spoke to you on the phone.
I've dashed straight here. What's happened?
I don't want to alarm you, but your husband's unconscious.
Unconscious?
I'm afraid so.
But what happened?
I'll tell you shortly.
But is he in danger?
You'll have to ask the doctors that. Will you please come with me? This is Dr. Streeter.
My husband. What's the matter with him? What's happened? Where is he? Can I see him?
You can see him in a while. Can I be frank with you?
Yes. Yes, of course.
We've only managed to do a preliminary examination of your husband so far, Mrs. Lithgow. And so we're not yet sure how serious his injuries are.
Injuries?
We don't know when or even if he'll regain consciousness. I can assure you that everything that's humanly possible will be done for him.
But what's happened to him?
I think the inspector had better explain that to you.
I want to know what's happened to him.
This is what seems to have happened. After you left the house, your husband returned to his workshop to continue assembling the contraption. Your housekeeper was in the kitchen washing the dishes. Suddenly, she heard a terrific explosion from the direction of the workshop. Though she was terrified, she dashed there, the door was blown off, the windows were shattered, smashed equipment and splintered furniture were piled and strewn in every direction. Smoke and dust filled the air. Your husband's body could be dimly discerned lying crumpled and motionless among the debris. Your housekeeper rang for us.
Where is she?
She is here in hospital, in a state of shock.
Can I see my husband? Can I see Kilda?
Yes. You can see your husband, and then you can talk to Miss Mackay for a minute or two.
Oh, Jess. I'm so upset. I blame myself.
Oh, no, Kilda.
It wouldn't have happened if I hadn't encouraged him to assemble that damn contraption.
Kilda, he'd have assembled it anyway. You know what he's like. Please don't blame yourself.
I can't help it. Oh, I'll never get over it. The sound of that diabolical thing going. Oh. I'll never get it out of my head.
We're going to keep you in the hospital overnight, Miss Mackay. And you too, Mrs. Lithgow. I'll give you both something that will ensure a good night's sleep. Well, Mrs. Lithgow, I'm happy to be able to tell you that fortunately your husband's bodily injuries are only superficial.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Yes. However, he's still unconscious, and we still aren't sure whether there's been any brain damage.
Oh, please, God, no.
Let's hope not.
When will he regain consciousness?
I'm sorry to say we still don't know when or if he will regain consciousness.
Oh. What about Kilda?
Oh, she's coming along as reasonably as can be expected.
Can we return home?
I don't think it would be advisable, and I know that the police would prefer you not to.
Then what shall we do?
Have you a friend that you and Miss Mackay could stay with?
Yes.
Then go to your friends with Miss Mackay, and I shall be in touch.
Well, Mrs. Lithgow, we've examined the wreckage.
Yes.
Yes, we've found parts of the device.
Yes.
And we're sure it's a bomb.
A bomb?
Yes. And we've found some of the wrapping paper with your Hampstead address on it. Postmarked Luton.
Will you be able to find out which post office in Luton it was sent from?
I hope so. We've got somebody working on that now.
A bomb? I can't really believe it.
Has your husband any enemies?
None.
Are you sure?
Completely. He's a very amiable man, universally well-liked.
Could there be a political motive?
No, he's no interest in politics. Why should anybody want to send my husband a bomb?
Well, that's what we're endeavouring to find out.
I suppose it's very difficult to remember individuals who bring in mail.
Well, yes, sir, that is certainly true.
Virtually impossible.
Yes, but we've got to try. Show them the wrapping paper, Sergeant.
Not much of it, is there?
No, Mr. Christian, but it has some handwriting on it.
Yes, but I mean, so what?
We can't remember handwriting.
I suppose not.
Wait a slide, Jeff. I remember this.
You do?
Yes, and for a very simple reason.
Yes?
Ray, you will remember it too.
Will I?
Yes, the man who brought this in borrowed my pen. Look, here it is. It is a very expensive ballpoint, one of the very best you can possibly buy. It was given to me by my brother-in-law who had bought it in Dubai.
The man, Mr. Mohammed.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, Inspector. The man wanted to add something to the address on the parcel. There you can see it, the second part of the postal code. It is written in different ink from the rest, the ink from my pen.
Oh, yeah, I'm beginning to remember.
When the man had completed his writing, he absent-mindedly put my pen in his pocket and started walking out of the post office.
Yeah, I remember. That was the guy you had the ding-dong.
Yes, the ding-dong.
What sort of a ding-dong?
Well, I called out to the man, "Excuse me, but you are taking away my pen." And the man turned and came back to me, and he was looking rather surly. And he said to me, "This pen is too bloody good for you." And I said, "You had better watch your language, mister, or I will report you to the Race Relations Board." And he replied to me, "Report me to whoever you like." And he then turned, and he simply stalked out of the office.
Very uptight.
Can you both describe the man to me?
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
Mrs. Lithgow, I think you should brace yourself for a shock.
What, Inspector?
We've discovered who posted the bomb.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, who?
Your husband.
My husband?
Yes, Marcus Lithgow.
Oh, no. There must be some mistake.
Well, that's what we thought at first. We thought the post office clerks must have made a mistake. It seemed beyond belief, too sick to contemplate. But we showed them photographs of your husband, and they were sure he was the man. We had no alternative but to follow the lead. We submitted the address from the parcel and several examples of your husband's writing to an expert, and he reported they'd all been written by the same hand. The expert said there'd been a clumsy attempt to disguise the handwriting, but there was no doubt it was your husband's. We didn't tell you about this before, in case it led nowhere. But the conclusion, however incredible, is unavoidable. Marcus Lithgow posted the bomb to himself.
Why? What conceivable motive could it have?
I was hoping you might be able to help us there.
No, I can't.
Had he been depressed recently?
No.
Behaving oddly?
No. His behaviour was absolutely normal.
Had he any problems?
No, Inspector. He was as cheerful and fulfilled as ever. We were extremely happy together.
Jasmine.
Yes?
Marcus has regained consciousness.
Oh, wonderful. That's some of the sweetest news I've ever had.
You can go in now.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited.
I'll come with you.
Right. Hello, my darling.
I'm sorry. Who are you?
This is your wife, Mr. Lithgow.
Wife?
Yes, my darling. Jasmine.
Jasmine?
Oh. Can't you remember me at all?
No. I'm very sorry.
I'm afraid he's suffering from complete amnesia.
What's that? Amnesia?
You can't remember anything.
Oh, that's true. I can remember that.
Oh, Kelda, I'm so frightened and bewildered.
You're bound to be.
I still can't believe he posted the bomb to himself.
Nor can I.
He must get his memory back.
Can't he remember anything at all yet?
No. He's quite unable to answer any questions from the police.
Have they told him about their suspicions?
No. The doctors don't think he's ready for that yet, and they've asked me not to tell him anything.
Well, it's probably only a question of time.
Oh, I don't know. Will he ever remember anything?
What do the doctors say?
They don't know. He may never regain his memory. Good morning, darling.
Good morning.
How are you feeling today?
Fine. But I still can't remember anything.
Nothing at all?
Not from before the explosion.
Well, don't worry, my darling.
I'll try not to. I see that you've been doing a spot of shopping.
Yes. Just a few things I picked up for Keld on my way here.
May I look?
Of course.
What's this?
Soured cream. Oh. Paprika.
Oh, and powdered eggs.
Yes.
Well, at least the powdered eggs won't roll under the wardrobe.
No.
What is Kelda going to make with the powdered eggs, I wonder?
Oh, some new kind of flan she'd heard about him. What did you say?
I was wondering what Kelda was going to make with the powdered eggs.
No, before that, about the egg rolling under the wardrobe.
Did I say that?
Yes.
Well, it just came out.
But, darling, don't you see? You must have remembered it.
I just said the words. What do they mean?
You had an egg. It did roll under the wardrobe.
An egg?
Yes, it was ceramic.
Ceramic?
Yes. It was given to you by your friend, the Annie from Cornwall.
Wait a minute.
Yes?
I don't remember her, but I do vaguely remember the egg. A ceramic egg.
It was mottle green.
Yes.
Leonie was downstairs. She'd just given you the egg.
Huh?
I was still in bed. You brought the egg upstairs to show me.
Yes. I was so pleased with it.
It's coming back.
Yes. I handed it to you.
I dropped it.
And it rolled under the wardrobe.
Oh, darling, at last you've remembered something.
Yes. Yes, I do believe I have.
Doctor! Doctor!
Yes, I think so. I think I can remember the day we drove to Silverstone with Tony and Barbara.
It was a blustering, windy day.
Yes. Didn't we stop for petrol just outside Buckingham?
Yes, we did.
And Barbara. Barbara! She talked about Wittgenstein all the way.
Wittgenstein. That's right. She seemed obsessed with him.
Hmm.
Oh, darling. You're remembering more and more every day.
Yes. Yes. We went to Silverstone the same week that Matthews became head of department.
Was it the same week?
Yes. Matthews. Useless at administration. Nice chap, but useless at administration.
Oh. I thought you thought otherwise.
Otherwise?
Yes, I thought you thought he was a good administrator.
Did I ever say that?
I think so.
No. I don't think I can have, darling. I never thought much of him as an administrator.
Oh. Well, perhaps it's me who's misremembering.
Oh, yes. Perhaps amnesia's infectious.
Oh, don't worry about that, Jasmine. He's bound to make mistakes and say odd things. It's to be expected. His behaviour is bound to be rather odd for a long time. He hasn't suffered much physical damage, but he has suffered a tremendous shock.
Just come back from the hospital?
Yes.
And how's the patient?
Very well. The doctors say he's fit enough to answer police questions.
And is he willing to?
Yes. But he knows nothing about their suspicions, poor lamb.
Has he never said anything about the bomb?
Only that he can remember nothing about it.
Oh, that's understandable.
Yes, that's what the doctors say. Anything to do with the bomb is very traumatic.
Aye.
That's why the police want me to be there when they do question him. To give some support and confidence.
All right, Mr. Lithgow, shall we begin?
Yes, Inspector.
Have you ever been to Luton?
Luton?
Yes, in Bedfordshire.
Well, perhaps. Many years ago.
Not recently?
I don't remember recently. I mean, how recently?
Oh, a month ago?
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
Do you think it's possible you went to Luton then?
Well, I can think of no reason why I should.
No reason why you might have gone there?
No.
None at all.
Mr. Lithgow, I'd like you to have a look at something.
Yes?
Show him the writing from the parcel.
Oh, thanks.
Do you recognise that writing?
No.
Show him the note we got from the university.
Thank you.
Do you recognise that writing?
Well, yes, it's mine.
That's right. Now compare the note and the paper from the parcel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice any similarity between the writings?
Well, perhaps.
Suppose I were to tell you that they are both yours.
Both mine?
Yes. Suppose I were to tell you that you sent the bomb to yourself.
So he's remembered all about the bomb now? Yes. After he was shown the writing, it started to come back.
Oh, it must have been awful painful for the poor man.
Yes, it was, poor darling. But over a series of interviews, he managed to piece it all together, and this morning he taped a full statement for the police.
For a considerable time before the explosion, I'd been feeling depressed. I'd come to feel that my career as a geologist was meaningless. I was giving the same boring lectures year after year, and I'd contributed nothing whatsoever to the science. My life felt empty. Even my hobbies no longer amused me. The prizes I'd won for motorcycle racing were no more to me than worthless baubles. But the most demoralizing thing of all was the fact that I'd never been able to give Jasmine a child. Although she'd never complained, I felt she must feel deeply frustrated, and I developed the belief that I must give her the opportunity to marry another man who could give her a family before it was too late. I knew that she would never agree to leave me whilst I was still alive. Even though I say it myself, I think I was rather clever at hiding my depression from my wife, my friends, my colleagues, and my students. But a time came when my desperation became insupportable, and I had to act. I decided to end my life, but I didn't want it to look like suicide. I knew that if Jasmine ever suspected that I'd killed myself, she would blame herself, and I couldn't countenance that. However, at the same time, I didn't want to stage what would look like an ordinary accident. That would be too unmemorable and too meaningless. After a lifetime of what seemed to mean nothing, I wanted a death which would somehow cause me to be remembered for something. I wanted a death that might make me appear a martyr and, yes, even a hero in Jasmine's memory. It was these considerations which led me to the idea of a bomb. If I were blown up by a bomb, it could look as though terrorists had killed me. And I was very good at making things, and it was easy enough for me to work out how I could make what I required. But I had to be careful. I mean, if an obvious bomb arrived through the post, Jasmine and Kelder would insist that I send for the police. Therefore, I'd have to make the bomb look like a joke, or a toy, perhaps sent by some friend. In this way, Jasmine and Kelder's fears could be allayed. I also had to be careful that the bomb wouldn't point to any specific terrorist organization, because if it did, then that organization would quite plausibly be able to disclaim all responsibility for it. I wanted to leave behind a mystery. That the kind of mysterious death at the hands of unknown and possibly political murderers which people go on theorizing about forever. It seemed to me that sending myself the do-it-yourself bomb through the post would perfectly achieve this end. And so it might, if I hadn't overestimated my own cleverness. Firstly, regarding the bomb itself, I had insufficiently understood how it would explode and the effects of its blast. Secondly, I hadn't been able to disguise my handwriting thoroughly enough. Thirdly, I'd underestimated the observational capacities of post office clerks. I felt inwardly so highly strung when the clerk asked for the return of his pen, I was unable momentarily to contain my exasperation. My remark, by the way, was in no sense racist. I would have said the same to an Englishman. Well, there you are. All in all, I have to admit that I bungled the whole operation.
I'm shattered.
I'm sorry.
You've blown me to pieces with your confession.
I'm sorry.
Why did you never tell me you were so unhappy?
I didn't want to distress you.
Distress me?
Yes.
But I'm your wife.
I know, I was wrong.
Can't you see how all this has distressed me?
Yes.
I was never bothered about having children.
Well, I thought...
Surely you knew that.
I should have done.
How could you ever have imagined I'd have been happy if you'd died in such a horrible way?
I can only repeat that I'm deeply sorry. I was seized by a kind of madness. Even to me, it all seems very strange now.
Oh, my love.
My love. Thank God I didn't succeed.
In the circumstances, Mr. Lithgow, we've decided to proceed no further with the case.
Thank you.
The department is going to give you indefinite sick leave, Marcus.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, Professor Matthews.
Not at all. We want to see you back, fighting fit.
Thank you.
You're the best teacher we've got.
You flatter me.
No, I don't. And as for research, it isn't true, you know, that you've contributed nothing to geology.
Oh, it's very nice of you to say that.
Nonsense. It's the truth.
Marcus, after you've left the hospital, we think you should see a psychiatrist.
Oh. Oh, very well.
Good. I'll refer you to a nice one, a lady.
Well, Mrs. Lithgow, I've seen your husband several times now, and I thought the time had come to have a chat with you. Yes. How do you think Marcus is doing? Well, very well, really, I suppose. But he still can't remember a lot of things. Oh, that's nothing to worry about. His behaviour will remain inconsistent for some considerable time to come, but he'll sort himself out in the end. Yes. The important thing is that he mustn't be put under any kind of strain. He mustn't work or pursue his old hobbies, do-it-yourself and motorcycle racing. I understand. What about making love? I see no reason why you shouldn't resume. Good. But remember, making love is a very sensitive business. Of course. You may find Marcus will take a little longer to, how shall I put it, to reorientate himself in bed than he will in less sensitive activities. I appreciate that. You'll need to be very understanding and very caring. Oh, don't worry, Doctor. I shall be. I adore you.
I adore you. I'm feeling fitter than I've done for years.
You're looking very debonair.
You're looking deliciously divine.
Thank you, kind sir.
Let's go on holiday.
We've just come back from holiday.
Well, what's to stop us going off again?
Aha, nothing like treasure.
Where shall we go?
Where haven't we been?
Hardly anywhere.
Days at the tracks?
Nights in the sack. Isle of Man, Foggeen, Killer Lane,
Agadawi,
Zolda, Spa, Nogaro, Carol,
Monte Carlo, Modena, Monza, Monjuice Park,
Cesenatico,
Salzburgring.
Nürburgring.
Kloppenburg.
Gothenburg.
Most. Tantra. Kamiz.
Talladega. Hinsdale. San Jose.
Daytona.
Atlanta.
Monterey. Willow Springs.
Pukekohe. Amaru Park. Oh, let's make love.
Again?
Yes.
You're insatiable.
Oh, that big bang's rejuvenated me.
Oh, no. It took you a little time to, but... Oh. No, wow, you're so ardent.
Oh, my love. Oh.
Love. Oh.
You sound happy again this morning.
Because I was so happy again last night.
It seems a certain somebody makes you feel happy every night.
He does, he does.
You're a lucky woman.
I am. He's a lovely chap. You know, in all the years we've been married, he's never been unfaithful.
Is that a fact?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, what will you be wanting for lunch today?
Ah, that's what I wanted to tell you. Marcus and I are going down to Eastbourne for the day.
Eastbourne?
Ah, yeah. I know it sounds odd.
Morning, Kelda.
Morning. I hear you're going to Eastbourne.
Yes. I said to Jasmine, let's nip off somewhere today.
He told me to say the first place I thought of, and out popped Eastbourne.
Of all the places and all the continents she could have thought of.
Oh, there are worse places than Eastbourne.
There are?
But she could have said slum.
Yes.
Yes. Well, let's have a day in good old English Eastbourne. I haven't been there for yonks.
Smell the sea air.
Yes, lovely.
Lovely.
Let's walk the whole length of the promenade.
Yes, let's.
Just look at the sun on the sea.
Yes.
Hello, Fred.
Who said that?
Hello, Fred.
Hello, Fred.
Let's ignore this and just walk on.
Yes, darling.
Oh, no, you don't. You ain't ignoring me. I'm not getting out your way.
What's the matter with you?
Oh, come off it, Fred. You can't pretend you don't know me.
Or me.
I'm sorry, but you're making a mistake.
Oh, no, I am.
Nor am I.
You're Fred Bing.
Of course you are.
And I'm Vera Quinton.
And I'm Norma Rimmel.
Mm. I'm sorry. I'm afraid you're both wrong. I don't know either of you.
Oh, do me a favour.
My name is Marcus Lithgow.
Bloody liar.
I beg your pardon.
God, you make me see red. I don't give a monkey's what name you've dreamt up for your fancy bit of fluff here, but you can't put one over on me. We lived together for an old bleeding year.
Yeah.
Name Street. Gravesend, you ain't forgotten.
No, I haven't forgotten you. I can't have forgotten you, because I've never seen you before. I've never lived in Gravesend. I've never even been to Gravesend.
Liar! Liar! Liar!
You lived with her 5 years ago.
You know you did.
I used to come round and see you nearly every day.
That can't be true.
How the hell would you know?
Because I'm not Marcus's bit of fluff, as you so charmingly put it. I'm his wife. I've been married him for over 12 years.
Yeah, right.
And in all those years, he's never been apart from me for more than a few weeks at a time. He can't possibly have lived with you for a year.
Well, you're lying too.
Yeah.
I don't know what your game is, but you can't fool me.
Or me.
I know you're Fred Bings, and I can prove it.
How could you possibly prove it?
You've got a scar on your left thigh.
Can I believe my ears?
I know you have, because I'll give it you.
Oh, dear. That's so melodramatic.
Yes, straight out of a Hammer film.
No, you can laugh, Miss Iron Mighty, but he's got a scar, and that proves me wrong.
Oh, no, what you say doesn't prove you're right. It proves you wrong. Marcus has no scar on either of his thighs. I've been married to him for 12 years and I've never seen any scar.
Pull your trousers down.
Yeah, let's have a look.
I've had enough of this.
Come into that shelter, let's have a look.
Yeah. Come along, darling, let's move on.
Yes.
Get them off, get them off.
Let's have a good look.
They're obviously female bodies of some kind.
Yes, raving crackpots.
You bastard.
You bitch.
Jolly distasteful.
Jolly. It's between Roger Ryman and Kurt Liebman.
Oh, yes.
There has to be nobody else near them.
What are they riding again?
Ryman's on a Harley-Davidson KR750.
Oh, yes.
Stephen's on a BMW-based OHCOL special.
Oh, yes.
By his father 3 years ago.
As long as there is that?
Yes, a most fabulous bike.
Oh, I love Daytona.
Can't beat it. You know, this is one of the most exciting classic races I've ever seen.
Oh, yes, look at them go.
Oh, with riders like them, it's a pity one of them has to finish second.
They swap the lead 2 dozen times.
Oh, at least.
At least.
That Lehman's still just ahead.
But Ryman's catching him.
Oh, he'll have to be nearly in a halfway round the last lap.
But he's doing it, look.
Yes, he passed him.
Oh, it's so exhilarating.
Terrific.
Oh, do you still want to race again one day?
No, no, I've got over all that. I'm satisfied just watching now with you.
Oh, darling.
Good Lord, look, something's happened to Ryman's machine.
What?
There's something wrong with his rear wheel.
It's slowing him down.
There are only 3 quarters to the finish.
Lehman's going to pass him.
He's diving through.
Ryman's grappling to keep his bike upright.
Lehman's past the post.
Oh, we're great.
Terrific.
Tremendous.
Oh, come on, let's go to the bar. I'll buy you a bottle of champagne.
Kilda?
Aye?
Where's the little radio?
I think Marcus took it to his bedroom.
Right. I'll go and get it. Marcus? Marcus? Where's the radio?
Oh, I didn't know you were there.
I was looking for the radio.
It's over there. What are you staring at? You seen me with nothing on before?
Not since the explosion, not without swimming trunks on.
Really?
No, we always made love in the dark.
Well, that's how you like it.
Yes, but it means I've never noticed your thigh before.
Well, suppose not. What about it?
Your left thigh.
Yes, what about it?
There's a scar on it.
Is there?
Yes.
Oh, yes. So there is. Well, it's very small.
Discernible.
Yes. I'd better turn the shower off.
I know what you're thinking. Those silly women down in Eastbourne.
It's easily explained. As a matter of fact, it's more on my pelvis than on my thigh. It was caused by the explosion. Well, you know I also have scars on my back and arms. Look. Anyway, I'd better finish drying myself.
Oh, yes, of course, darling. I'm sorry I stared at you.
Oh, no, it was so natural. I've never thought of it before, but I suppose it is a bit of a coincidence. I have a scar on my pelvis and the woman accused me of having one on my thigh.
Yes, of course. It's only a trivial coincidence. How could it be anything else?
Will you be in for dinner this evening?
No, Marcus and I have been invited out by Dr. Streeter and his wife.
You going to the house?
No, they're taking us to a restaurant.
By some kind of coincidence, the man turned out to be a molecular biologist.
Mm. Mm. How amazing.
Astounding. Mm.
This lobster really is delicious.
It really is.
It is, yeah.
Excellent.
Well.
Talking of coincidences.
Yes.
Marcus and I had a strange encounter in Eastbourne a few months ago.
Oh, they don't want to hear about that, darling.
How do you know?
It's boring.
No. We'd love to hear about it, wouldn't we, Melbert?
Yes, of course. You'll be disappointed.
Oh, stop being a spoil sport, Marcus. Go on, tell us, Jasmine.
Well, Marcus and I were walking along the promenade when this woman accosted us. And accused Marcus of having lived with her 5 years ago.
What? Out of the blue?
Yes.
Was she drunk?
Probably.
I think she had a few screws loose. I told you it wasn't much of a story.
I haven't finished yet.
Oh, haven't you? Oh, I was going to ask Milbert about his new car.
Oh, you can do that later.
Yes, go on, Jasmine.
Well, as proof of her claim, the woman said Marcus had a scar on his left thigh. And here's the point of the story. Last week, I happened to catch Marcus coming out of the shower, and there, on his left thigh, was a scar.
Oh, really?
Good heavens.
Yes.
Well, I still say it's not much of a story.
I went through a whole ridiculous moment of doubt.
Oh, Jasmine.
But how's that for a coincidence?
Astounding.
Actually, the scars on my pelvis rather than my thigh. It was caused by the explosion.
Oh, stop trying to spoil a good story.
I may be wrong.
What?
But I don't remember you being cut on your lower pelvis or anywhere near your thigh.
Don't you?
I may be wrong, but I don't think so.
Aren't you making a mistake, darling?
No, I don't think so.
No, he's right. I made the mistake.
What do you mean?
Well, I said this car had been caused by the explosion because I'd forgotten the real cause. Well, you know what my memory's like. I assume the bomb was the cause, but to be perfectly honest, I don't really know how I got the scar. But I may have had something sharp in my pocket.
Yes,
of course, darling.
Yes, but that's enough of that. Let's talk about something else. Now, Milbert, another BMW?
A return ticket to Gravesend, please.
There's a little shop on the corner.
Excuse me, but I wondered if you could tell me whether a woman called Vera Quinton lives along this street.
Which street? We're on a corner, see?
Yes.
There are two streets, see?
Yeah, of course.
Neem Street and Roop Street.
Yes.
See?
Sorry, I mean Neem Street.
Neem Street?
Yes. Can you tell me whether a Vera Quinton lives down there?
Hey, Vera Quinton.
Well?
Don't know about hey, Vera Quinton.
No.
No. I only know the Vera Quinton.
The?
Only one as far as I know.
Ah.
Only one Vera Quinton.
Well, that must be the one I'm looking for.
Only one, see?
Can you tell me where she lives?
Mind telling me what it's about?
Oh, a personal matter.
Personal?
Yes.
Oh. Right, then. Number 79.
I believe Vera Quinton lives here.
You better come in.
Thank you.
Please come this way.
Thank you.
I'm afraid it's really rather dark in here.
Oh, that's all right.
I suppose you'd better... Oh, please, sit down.
Thank you. My name's Jasmine Lithgow.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, mine's Tim.
Ah. Is Vera not here?
No, she's not. I'm afraid I've some rather bad news for you.
Oh?
Vera's passed away.
She's dead.
It was the day before yesterday. She was knocked down by... Oh, my God. The man saw it.
Please.
No. No, I won't. She was tossed up and it crashed down on the... Broke. Snapped like a dog. Oh, my God.
Look.
He was dead before the ambulance reached the hospital.
Look, is there anything I can do for you?
No. No, I'll get some brandy.
Can I?
Well, if you spare.
Right.
Have some yourself.
Thank you. Listen, I can come back some other time.
No. I want to talk about her.
There.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
What? Why did you want to see her?
Well, we may have a friend in common.
Friend?
Yes, a man called Fred Binns.
Binns?
Yes.
Never heard of mentioning anybody of that name.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Oh.
What did this man have to do with my sister?
It was your sister?
Yes. My little sister. My only sister.
Well,
Apparently, Fred Binns lived with your sister about 5 years ago.
Lived with my sister?
I believe so.
I can't be right.
Why not?
My sister never lived with any man.
Are you sure?
My sister lived with me here. She never had any kind of sexual relations. She was very religious. Devout. Would have liked to have been a nun. Spent all her time doing good works. Oh, God. She was as pure as the morning light. So gentle and kind, a saint.
I don't really know how to say this, but I don't think we can be talking about the same person.
Why? Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, the woman I'm looking for was, well, quite different.
What did she look like?
Plumpish, red cheeks, brown hair, in her early 40s.
That's my sister.
Really?
That was my sister. I couldn't describe her better myself.
Oh, this is beyond me. Did your sister have, well, another side? I mean, did she sometimes behave differently?
You mean differently?
Well, was she sometimes, you know, a woman of the world, perhaps a bit loud? I mean, might she have visited Eastbourne with a friend?
Eastbourne?
Yes.
Eastbourne? Loud? Woman of the world? You're insulting my sister.
Oh, no.
Insulting her dead name.
No.
Desecrating her sacred memory. You come here and pour abuse on my love, my darling little sister.
Look, I'm sorry. No, I didn't want to cause you any pain. Although they sound similar physically, they can't be the same person. I'm truly sorry.
Well, yes, I'm sure you're right. I'm sorry I lost my temper.
Oh, no. It's very understandable.
It's not my fault.
No. There's been a mix-up somewhere.
I suppose so. Sorry, I can't help you.
No, I'm sorry. I suppose I better go.
Yes. Sorry.
What the... Vera Quinton.
So, what's your bump?
I want you to tell me about Fred Binns.
Oh, realised there was something in my accusations, have you?
Maybe.
Who is this Fred Binns?
Why don't you keep your mouth shut? Ain't you caused enough trouble already?
He certainly has. Who is this man?
Me boyfriend, with emphasis on the boy.
Oh, come off it, Vera. Who was this Binns?
It was a long time ago.
I wasn't lying when I said I'd never heard of him.
Weren't you?
No, he wasn't. I never told him nothing about Fred.
I see.
What'd you give her all that other cobblers for?
Gwen rang up from the shop, said there was some bird snooping round after you. Gwen didn't know whether the bird was plainclothes, filth, social security, or something to do with a gas cooker. Gwen thought I should be warned, so I could suss out what the bird was after and put her off the scent.
I love being described as a bird.
You Wally.
I was only trying to protect you.
But even after it was obvious I wasn't to be feared, you went on with the pretense.
Well, it was only a joke.
In bleeding poor taste.
Oh, give me a break.
Oh, I suppose you meant well. Come make us a cup of tea. He thinks he's a wag, but he's not bad bloke.
No?
Nah. What do you want to know about Fred Binns?
Where exactly was the scar on Fred Binns?
High up on his thigh.
Almost on the pelvis?
Yeah.
You're sure?
I ought to be. I put it there.
How did it happen?
I've lived in Gravesend all my life. I've known Fred since he was a little kid. When he was about 17, he went in the army and he was away for about 12 years. When he come back, he'd done all sorts of dead-end jobs. Yeah, he was a bit on the shady side, but he never got caught. Anyway, about 6 or 7 years back, he moved in with me down Neame Street. He was working as a postman at the time. Well, after we'd been living together for about a year, he started messing about with a bird who worked at the Rowan Hotel. That led to a right barney between me and him, during which I stabbed him in the thigh with my nail file. He moved out to my gaff and shacked up with the bird in the hotel. And she must have got browned off with him too, because about a year after he left me, she left him. She left Gravesend.
Fred seemed to live on his tod for a while. Then he disappeared. I mean, I no longer saw him round the town, and nor did nobody else. Nobody had no idea where he'd gone. I never clapped eyes on him again till I saw him with you down Eastbourne.
This woman who worked at the hotel, do you know where she went?
I got the faintest.
Do you know anything about her?
Not much. I hardly knew her. I think she was some kind of housekeeper at the hotel.
Can I speak to the manager, please? I'm the manageress. Can I help you? I'm trying to find a woman who was the housekeeper here about 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't here 2 years ago.
Oh.
I've only been here 8 months.
Is there anybody here who might remember the woman I'm looking for?
Now, let me see. Yes, I think there is.
Pedro! Oh, good.
I think Pedro may be able to help you.
What is it you want?
This lady is trying to find the housekeeper who was here 2 years ago.
The lady that was the housekeeper here at this hotel?
Yes.
Oh, let me see. Before this present housekeeper was here, there was an housekeeper here that was a German one. And before that, there was a housekeeper here that was an Irish one. The Irish one, she was here quite a long time, as I remember it.
Would she have been here 2 years ago?
Yes, I think she would, because I think the German one was only here for about a year.
Can you tell me anything about the Irish housekeeper?
Well, she was very Irish, you know? She spoke in the way Irish people do.
Did she have a boyfriend?
Oh, I think if my memory will serve me correctly, she did have several.
I mean one that lived in the hotel.
Oh, I think she did have several that lived with her up in that flat on the top floor there.
You don't remember one called Fred?
No, I'm very sorry, but I cannot.
What was the housekeeper's name?
Oh, now you have me. But I do remember that it was a very Irish one. Now, let me think. Ah, yes, yes, I do have it. I do have the first name she had. That was a Maggie. But what was the surname she had with it? Oh, let me think. Oh, yes, I think the other name she had was a Ferguson.
Ferguson?
Maggie Ferguson?
That doesn't sound like an Irish name to me.
Nor me.
Well, perhaps she was not Irish.
No.
No?
Oh, perhaps she was a Scotch.
Scots?
So you're back?
Yes. Is Marcus in?
No. Did you have a nice weekend in the country?
I found what I was looking for.
Oh, I didn't know you were looking for anything.
I was.
And what might that have been?
You.
What do you mean?
Amongst other things.
I don't know what you mean.
Don't you?
No.
Don't you? Maggie Ferguson.
Why did you call me that?
You'd better tell me the truth.
What are you talking about?
I already know enough to make things very difficult for you, should you refuse.
Have you had a bit too much of the sun, or what?
I've been to Gravesend.
What are you blethering on about?
I've talked to Vera Quinton. I've been to the Rowan Hotel.
Oh, you have? Bully for you, Hen.
Come on. Tell me.
Right. Hi, my name is Maggie Ferguson, and I'm from Glasgow. I saw this ad in a magazine, and I went to work in the hotel in Gravesend. After I'd been there a wee while, I met Fred Binns. We fell for each other. He moved into my flat, and I got him a job as a kitchen porter. One evening, about 3.5 years ago, I was cooking. Fred was watching the telly.
Resulting in the 500cc championship race at Bennington Park was won by Marcus Lithgow on a specially adapted Air Match Matisse. After the race, Edgar Brenton spoke to me.
Well, you must be feeling very pleased.
Yes, I am. It was a good race.
Really?
How many times have you competed in this race? This is my fourth.
I don't believe it.
I won it once before. Yes, 2 years ago.
Maggie!
Let's talk about your bike. Yes, it's not just an ordinary match.
Maggie!
Not
little modifications.
Maggie!
What do you want?
Look! Come here, quick! That guy. Wait, it's a spitting image of me.
Sorry, yes?
I mean, wait, well, his hair's differently cut, but I mean, otherwise we're identical.
Yeah?
I can't believe it! He's my double!
I can't believe it either!
I mean, even his voice is a dead ringer for mine.
Except his accent's not the same.
Well, I can't get over it. Look, when that item comes on again, I'm going to record it on the video.
Fred became intensely interested in Marcus. I've never seen him behave with such dedication before. He managed to find articles about Marcus in motorcycle magazines. He studied his accent and he got hold of some of his handwriting. He even visited the area around here in disguise and had a look at this house. One night he returned from such an expedition and told me you were advertising for a housekeeper. I applied for the job under the name Kelda Mackay and moved in. My task was to discover as much as I could about Marcus and yourself and pass it on to Fred. I also had to keep him briefed on your movements.
What about the bomb?
Fred had been in a bomb disposal unit in the army. He built the bomb and then dismantled it. Like Marcus, he's good at making things, and he learnt that Marcus was a do-it-yourself fanatic. He sent the bomb through the post. Oh, he'd hoped it'd appear harmless. In fact, it was harmless when it arrived, because it lacked a detonator. And he'd hoped it'd appealed to Marcus's curiosity. I was in hand when the bomb arrived to lull any suspicions Marcus might have and to egg him on to assemble it. Later, the same day, in the evening, as soon as you'd gone out to your meeting, I phoned Fred, who was waiting a few miles away. Not long after that, Fred phoned the house and spoke to Marcus. He said, "You don't know who I am, but I can explain everything about the parcel you received this morning. If you want to know, you must come and meet me." Marcus left the house immediately, and when he arrived at the rendezvous, Fred killed him.
How?
With a gun.
Go on.
Fred removed Marcus's clothes, put the body into the foundations of a new building being constructed nearby. Next morning, Marcus's body was submerged forever under tons of liquid cement. Then, dressed as Marcus and driving Marcus's car, Fred came here, to this house. He told me to shut myself safely in the kitchen, and then he went into the workshop and put the detonator into the bomb. As a bomb expert, he knew exactly how to arrange the explosion so that he'd be knocked out and receive superficial injuries, but nothing more. After Fred had regained consciousness, the amnesia and other symptoms of shock were faked. The supposed after effects of the explosion were the perfect cover for the ignorance he'd display and the slips he'd make. Oh, he deliberately drew attention to himself in the post office by insulting the clerk, and he meticulously imitated Marcus's handwriting on the wrapping paper. Fred's imitation wasn't bad, although he didn't want it to be perfect, even if he'd been capable of making it so. His imitation seemed like an attempt at disguise to the experts, and by these means he made sure that the police would think Marcus had sent the bomb to himself. And when the right time came, it was easy for him to provide a psychological motive for Marcus's attempted suicide.
Why did Fred do all this?
He was a poor man with poor prospects.
And why did you help him?
I love him.
Do you?
Aye, deeply. I had a rough time before I met him. I had problems with the law. He treated me well.
As a housekeeper?
Oh, that was only going to be for a couple of years. The plan was that I was going to share the good life with him.
And what about me?
Well, after a sufficient time had elapsed, we were going to dispose of you. Then Fred and I were going to get married.
And you'd become the second Mrs. Lithgow?
That's it.
It must have been very frustrating for you, having to wait.
Oh, it was. Thinking about you and him in bed together. It was all going to be worth it.
You're a murderer.
I am.
You helped murder my husband.
I did.
You were going to help murder me.
I was.
Do you hate me?
No.
Do you pity me?
I feel nothing about you either way.
Do you feel no remorse?
No. Why should I?
All right. Go to your room and stay there until I tell you can come out. When Fred returns, I want to speak to him alone.
Hello, my love.
Hello.
You're looking lovely.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
As lovely as Kelder.
Kelder?
Yes.
I've never thought of Kelder in that way.
No?
No.
Somebody fancies her.
Do they?
Yes. She has a boyfriend.
Oh, has she?
But she never brings him to the house.
Oh, I thought I'd never seen her with anybody.
She doesn't need to bring him here.
Well, why not?
Because he's here already.
Here?
Yes.
What, the chap who does the garden?
No. The chap I'm talking to.
Me?
Yes.
Ha! What are you saying? That I have some sort of interest in Kelder?
Yes.
But what on earth makes you think that?
I've been told.
Oh, told? By who?
A certain Maggie Ferguson.
All right. And what did she tell you?
Gravesend, the bomb, everything.
Everything?
Yes.
Oh, no. She can't have told you everything.
Why?
Because she doesn't know everything.
No?
Oh, no. There's more to what happened than even Maggie knows.
Tell me.
My parents in Gravesend, the Binns, were rough, ignorant people. My father could barely read or write. He and my mother were rarely sober. I had a miserable childhood, always underfed, shabbily dressed, and often bruised from beatings by the old man. As soon as I could get away into the army, I did. For a couple of years, I stayed away from Gravesend. But then I decided to spend a few days leave there, in the hope that my parents might have mellowed. I met my father in a boozer.
Got yourself a striper.
That's right.
Smart.
Ah, oh, thanks.
The army. I'll drink to that.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers. I remember my own army days.
Do you?
Yeah, that was a life. Yeah. Oh, swilling a beer, pulling a crumpy.
Being the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing off bleeding Jerry.
Great days.
Never been the same since.
Oh, I can believe you. How's Mum's?
Can't kneel no more. Don't even try.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh, well. So, you come back and see us?
That's right.
After all this time.
Better late than never.
Yeah. Where'd you come from?
Well, today.
Yeah.
Aldershot.
Aldershot.
Yeah.
I was at Aldershot.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, Army life suiting, is it?
Could be worse.
Oh, yeah. You're looking well on it.
Oh, thanks.
What's the pay like these days?
Can't complain.
Bleeding poor in my day.
Yeah?
Yeah. You put a bit aside, have you?
Oh, I bet.
I bet, eh? Well, your ma and me, we got nothing but a bleeding pension.
Yeah.
Yeah, son, slips a few notes, eh?
Huh? Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, come on, what's this?
£10.
£10?
All right, a couple more, £20. Yeah, £30.
Oh, come on, you do a bit better than that.
Oh, sorry, I can't.
With all you're earning.
Well, I have expenses.
Well, bloody diabolical, you ain't changed, have you?
If you say so.
Still a mean little yobbo.
No, I don't want to argue
with you. Two bleeding years away and never sends a bleeding penny.
Let's keep it friendly.
Not a bleeding penny.
Well, why should I?
Because you're supposed to be our bloody son.
Well, what you ever do for me except knock me about?
You're a bloody liar.
No, I wanted to avoid all this.
You're a liar, you're ugly and you're... You're ungrateful.
Yeah, well, I take after me old man then, don't I?
Oh, you're not my son.
No, I wish I won.
Now?
I really do.
Ah, now I'm going to tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I ain't your dad, and this ain't your mother.
Well, I wish that were true.
It is bleeding true. Your real mother was a whore.
Do what?
Nobody knew who your father was.
Oh, do me a favour.
I did you a bloody big favour by taking you in. Your bitch of a real mother give birth to bleeding twins.
Twins?
Twins, yeah. You and another one, little bastard. She give you to me and Liz and the other to somebody else. Well, Liz had wanted a nipper for years. Couldn't have none.
Look, if this is true, why'd you never tell it me before?
Because me and Liz wanted you to think that you was our son, so you'd treat us proper. But since you're bleeding scarred, don't matter no more. No, when Liz first got you, she was well pleased, but she soon came to bloody well rue it. You turn out to be such a dirty, lazy, mean-faced, fat-gutted...
I didn't believe a word of it. I thought it was just another of his drunken ramblings. Not until many years later, when I saw Marcus on television, did I realise that the old man had told me the truth. Marcus was so astoundingly like me, it couldn't merely be a coincidence. When I realised that I did have a twin, I decided to take his place. I decided to kill him. I summoned him to the rendezvous, and when he arrived...
Mr. Binns! Here I am, Mr. Lithgow. Ah, I couldn't see you in the shadow.
I'll step out.
Good heavens, you see it immediately. I can't believe it.
Well, I couldn't at first.
But surely it isn't possible.
We are both here.
Only identical twins could be so much alike.
We are identical twins.
But that's impossible.
Why?
I don't have a twin.
How do you know that, Mr. Lithgow?
My parents, they'd have told me.
Mine didn't tell me.
But mine would.
Not until I was in my teens.
They would have told me.
But they didn't.
What evidence have you that we're twins?
Same as you.
And what's that?
The evidence of me eyes.
Is that all?
Well, that's a lot.
I don't know.
You can't deny the evidence of your eyes.
There is an amazing similarity, but...
Our poor old Ma was a brass down in Gravesend. She'd give us both away, you to a wealthy family and me to a poor one.
Well, suppose, just for a moment, I give you the benefit of the doubt. Why have you summoned me here?
Well, it's obvious you've had a very different life from mine.
Maybe.
I've been kicked around all my life, whereas you've been treated with respect.
I suppose that could be true.
You've had a first-rate education.
Yes.
You're an eminent geologist.
Yes.
A champion motorcyclist.
Yes.
You inherited a lot of money.
Yes.
You live in a magnificent house.
Yes.
You're married to an adoring and adorable wife.
Yes.
Whereas I live in one room, have had nothing but bum jobs and am completely skint.
Well, all right, what of it?
Doesn't it occur to you that fate has been very unjust?
I don't know.
Well, I do, Mr. Lithgow. I think fate doled out almost nothing to me and lavished almost everything on you.
I don't think it's useful to think like that.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Well, I do, Mr. Lithgow. I found it very useful.
How?
It's helped me work out a way in which fate's injustice can be righted.
Righted?
Yeah. When I discovered that neither you nor anybody who knows you is aware of my existence, I decided to devise a little plan.
What sort of plan?
I believe that if fate don't give you a fair share of luck, then you must do it yourself.
What does that mean?
You must give yourself the luck. I decided to give myself me rightful share of luck. Me rightful share of the luck, which had been so unevenly divided between what are, in every other respect, equals, identical twins, you and me.
And how do you intend to do that?
I'm going to help myself to half of your share.
How?
We're both the same age.
I suppose so.
We're both about halfway through life.
I suppose so.
You've had half a lifetime of good fortune. I'm going to take your place and have the other half of that lifetime. The second half of a life of good fortune. The money, the house, the wife.
How are you going to accomplish that?
I'm
going to
bump you off.
Oh. Don't be absurd.
I'm going to bump you off. And getting bumped off in a concentrated form is going to be your share of bad fortune. It'll represent your all of a lifetime of bad luck. We both started off in Gravesend, but in my case, I stayed there. The grave never finished for me. It was the beginning of a long dead end. Whereas in your case, it really was Gravesend, because you got away almost immediately to life and love. Now, we're both halfway between the beginning and the end. We're going to swap positions. You're going into the grave, and I'm coming out of it.
Surely you don't really mean you're going to kill me?
Yes, I do.
Surely not.
Oh, yes. Here's my shooter.
Oh. Put that away.
No.
Listen. If what you say is true, and you really are my twin, there's no need for that.
Yes, sir.
No, I'll do whatever I can to make up for your past deprivations.
You won't.
I will. I'll give you half of everything I've got.
Nah. Even if you kept your word, I'd somehow always remain a poor relation.
Why?
I'd always look shoddy compared to you.
No.
I'd have to go on being Fred Binns, and I don't want to. I want half your life. I want to be Marcus Lithgow.
You must really hate me.
On the contrary, I feel no animosity towards you at all. I admire you. You're a very clever man. It'll be an honour to take your place.
You're obviously a very clever man, too.
Oh, I am. No false modesty. In many ways, our talents are similar. It's just that as Fred Binns, mine ain't exactly been allowed to shine. Whereas as Marcus Lithgow, I think I'll be able to do you justice.
Justice?
Yeah.
Is shooting me down in cold blood going to be justice?
Oh, yes, I think so. It's this concept of justice rather than your wealth which has really motivated me to do it. I think what I'm going to do is completely fair, and there's no reason to pity you. But I'm not doing it in cold blood, Marcus. My brother, my twin. I feel very warmly towards you.
Brother!
Very warmly towards me, Marcus Lithgow. Goodbye, Fred Binns.
So, now I know everything.
Now you know everything.
Did you never feel anything for me?
Oh, you're a nice enough woman. But I love Maggie.
Those nights we spent together. How did you endure them? How could you pretend to be so amorous?
Well, I had you in me arms, but Maggie in me imagination.
You were making love to her?
Yeah. Where is she?
In her room.
Maggie! You know everything. But what can you do about it? Do you really think we're going to let you walk out of here? I've killed once, I can kill again. It's always been part of our plan to get rid of you anyway.
I told her that.
You can't escape.
Can't I?
No way.
None at all.
I'm not frightened of you.
Frightened or not, you can't get away.
I'm not as much of a fool as you imagine.
Fool or no fool, you can't get away.
We'll see about that. I've written everything down. Everything I found out in Gravesend and posted it to my bank to be placed in a safe deposit box. Hey. I've also sent a note to my solicitor. The envelope is marked not to be opened until 12 hours after receipt. If he hasn't heard from me when the 12 hours are up, he'll open the envelope. My note asks and authorises him to read the statement in the safe deposit box. Hmm. On the other hand, if I ask my solicitor for the envelope back before the 12 hours are up, he will return it to me unopened with no questions asked. But the statement will remain in the safe deposit box. And should I mysteriously disappear in the future, the deposit box will be open.
Yeah, all right, you win. But you can't prevent us from leaving.
Oh, no, I can't prevent you from leaving, but I can phone the police the second you're out of the house. You're both quite striking in appearance. You won't get very far. You'll be caught and tried and separated. No. Yes, separated forever. Yes, yes, cry. Cry for yourself. You had no tears for me.
Come on, Maggie, let's get going. What she says is true, but we've no alternative.
Wait, you have an alternative.
What?
I have a proposition for you.
A proposition?
Yes.
What do you mean, a proposition?
Fred, you wanted to share Marcus's life. Share his money, share his house, share his wife. Well, so you shall. Particularly Marcus's wife. Particularly me. You shall share my life.
You mean that?
Yes.
You and me? Jasmine and Fred? We'll share life together?
Yes.
But what about me?
Oh, there'll be a share for you too.
You mean we'll all live together?
Yes. We'll all go on living together.
Well, that's very big of you.
We'll all share life together. But it's going to be a share in a life and a wife that you hadn't expected.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Marcus and I were very happy together. But there was one flaw in our marriage that no one except the two of us knew about. A problem that was a source of great frustration for me. It wasn't a lack of children. I was never really bothered about having children. No, the deep dissatisfaction came from my aborted career.
Career?
Yes. When I met Marcus, I had ambitions to be a singer, a nightclub singer. I did the odd semi-amateur gig here and there, but I hadn't got very far. Marcus was very good-looking, very charming, very wealthy. He swept me off my feet. He offered me a life I might never achieve as a singer. You talked about luck. Marcus offered me a chance that might never occur again. I grabbed it. But there was one enormous drawback. A price had to be paid. Marcus didn't want me to continue singing. He was adamant. He was very old-fashioned in some ways. He thought a wife who was a popular singer would damage his scientific career, his professional reputation. And so I had to forego my career. Life with Marcus was good, but in my heart there always remained an unsatisfied longing. But now everything's changed. Fred, you will become Marcus again, and I will resume my career. Oh. As the new change Marcus, you will use your wealth to finance my career. You will resign from the university, where you could never return anyway, and devote the whole of your time and attention to my career. You will do absolutely everything I tell you to do.
But what about me?
You'll remain what you are, the housekeeper. Just that, exactly that, and nothing more. Fred will continue to sleep with me.
Oh, my God.
Continue sharing my bed.
Oh, my God.
For as long as I say so. But even if I kick him out, you'll never share a bed with him again.
You bitch!
You're an art woman.
Yes, I am. I've had a crash course in it, and who taught me? Do you accept my proposition?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We accept your proposition. What else can we do?
Exactly. So, you both get a share in the life you decided to take for yourselves.
It never entered my mind. Once you told me I was mistaken, that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one. It never entered my mind. You have what I lack myself, and now that you were there again to get into my hair again.
Isn't she terrific?
She's wonderful.
So assured.
So relaxed.
Is this the first time you've heard her live?
Yes.
I've seen her several times.
I can understand why.
I followed her career.
Who are those people she's waving to at that table?
Oh, well, the flamboyant guy with the tan. That's her current lover.
Mm, he's gorgeous.
The guy in the well-cut suit is her agent.
He looks as though he's made a few bob out of her.
The elegant lady by his side is his wife.
Mm-hmm. And who's the dowdy little man in the drab suit?
Oh, that's the husband.
She has a husband?
Yeah, he's absolutely devoted to her.
Really?
Hmm. He inherited a lot of bread and he's used it to further her career. Apparently, he even gave up his own career for her.
Did he really?
Yeah, he's amazing. He's very quiet, self-effacing, and nobody really. He just lives for her, lives through her, goes everywhere with her, always in the background, always ready to satisfy her slightest whim. He begrudges her nothing. As you can see, she even flaunts her lovers in front of him he doesn't seem to mind.
I think it's rather beautiful.
Yes, it is. A perfect example of self-sacrifice.
But their attempts at love were only imitations of my old frame. I can't even think of his name, but I'll never be the same. Until I discover what became of my friend.
In Do It Yourself by David Halliwell, Marcus Lithgow and Fred Binns were played by Terry Molloy. Jasmine was Lois Dane. Dr. Streeter, Saeed Jaffrey. Kelda Mackay, Nell Brennan. Inspector Bright and Mr. Binns, Edwin Richfield. Vera Quinton was Gillian Goodman. Mrs. Streeter and Norman Rimmel, Hedley Nicklaus. Walker and Pedro, John Dixon. Psychiatrist and nightclub singer, Catherine Hurlbut. Tim, Rob Swinton. Edgar Brenton, Trevor Harrison, Matthews, Alan Devereux, and the pianist was Harold Rich. The play was produced in Birmingham by Philip Martin.